Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net! Mamma mia! Ronaldo Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, Austin, Texas. You may be outside building a snowman. Amazing weather here in Texas this past weekend. And thank you for tuning in to Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin. And, of course, as always, it's presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com. Personal injury attorneys, they're going to work for you 24-7. John and his firm we'll cover you. 512-865-6710. Great show in store here tonight. We're going to do a dive into the Austin FC roster here in the first segment. Second segment, we'll have on the Soccer Insider. He also writes, as you know, for the Washington Post, Stephen Goff. He'll have a nice little bit of a take. We'll ask him about Ulysses Segura, who spent 3 years at DC United and is now a player for Austin FC. So a lot to chew on here tonight. Final segment will be Warren Barton of Fox, also a defender for Newcastle United back in the day. We're going to talk about the romanticism of that beautiful thing that is called the FA Cup. And if you saw 8th tier Marine FC at home against the star quality of Tottenham Hotspur, it was amazing because the field was bordered by the backyards of homes, and people were in their backyards. Those were the people that had an opportunity to watch this game. But it was a semi-pro team against a pro team. Just a wonderful connection, that overlap, just reminding us about the game and how many others play the game than just those that we watch in the greatest leagues in the world and on television these days. And speaking of that, Matthew Hoppe, a hat trick. You don't know him? 19 years old. Played for the Irvine Strikers in California. Went to the Barcelona Academy in Arizona. Well, hit for a 3-goal hat trick for Schalke in a 4-0 win. It was our first win in 30 games. He's 19 years old, as I mentioned, from California. They had not won a game since last January 17th. And Matthew Hoppe now has captured the imagination of many now as we continue to see the high-profile nature of the American player that we can watch in a variety of leagues. And we're not just talking about the Weston McKennies and the Christian Pulisics and the Gio Reynas, the Tyler Adams, but guys like Matthew Hoppe on Schalke. It is an amazing time for us as American soccer fans. All right, let's take a deep dive on the Austin FC roster. Now, there's a number of interesting things here. The current roster right now has an average age of 26 and a half right now. 26 and a half. So key signings. Let's go right to Alexander Ring, because I think we've seen over and over that Josh Wolf, Claudio Reyna obviously knows Alexander Ring, Finnish international. Took a lot to get him to Austin. One of the top central midfielders in the league, there is no question. You speak of consistency, you speak of leadership, you know what you get game in and game out from this man. And as Josh Wolf has mentioned many times, you've heard him talk about the middle third of the field, calling it a sacred area. At 29, he brings leadership right up the spine of your team. So here is one of your big leaders. Then you go to Rodney Redis and Cecilio Dominguez, your first two signings. Goals, chances created, guys that are going to be expected to beat people off the dribble and via the pass and via their ideas. These are two high-profile signings from Paraguay. And it's super interesting to watch Cecilio Dominguez, and I want to watch him more. But he can look like a different player at different times. One moment he's a playmaker, he's a distributor. The next moment, he's driving into the box to attack a cross or running at somebody off the dribble or calming the game down with the skill set that he has. And then you got the youthful Rodney Redis, who will always be the first ever signing for Austin FC. Versatile, young, aggressive, can be a penetrator, can turn defenses. can play on either flank, can play as a striker as well. Nick Lima, like a thief in the night. Austin FC grabbed Lima from San Jose. Very cultured outside back, rising, dependable type guy, acquired from San Jose. You got to be really, really happy about that signing. That was a great move. Matt Beisler now, career of excellence. From Sporting Kansas City, all that success there, World Cup for the United States, spurned Europe to stay in MLS, big-time professional attitude, a leader, tremendous spokesperson, tremendous representative for the club. He's going to be motivated, and he wants to prove that he has more to give. And this is, again, more experience up the middle of a team. Takes up great starting positions, great reader of the game. These are all assets. And he can also release players over distance with his passing range. And the only thing you're going to want to try to avoid, like with any older center back that might have lost a half a step, you're not going to want him to be isolated, having to defend people one-on-one running at him in open field without cover. And I'm sure Josh Wolf is going to figure that out. Diego Fagundes picked up. Another good signing. And another guy that was a lifer with one club in New England. Young kid, very young signing in Major League Soccer. A lot of pressure on him. You know, all kinds of things when it comes to just people praising him at such a young age. I mean, he's had to handle a lot. And he's already been in this league 10 years at 25 years of age. He's talented. You put him with Radisson Domingues, and these are guys that can individually make a play, create a chance for themselves, can change a game for you, win a game. Maybe win a game you don't deserve to win. Win a game you've been outplayed. Every team needs to do that during the course of a Major League Soccer season. Maybe he scores a goal against the run of play that changes the momentum of a game simply because of a little flick or change of direction or creating a small window of space. Like Redison Dominguez, he's fun to watch. These are the guys that are going to be expected to make some of the plays for you, the majority of the plays. And I'm sure he's glad to get the new challenge in Austin, Texas, with all the excitement, all the energy coming into this season, as opposed to playing in Foxborough, which, frankly, on the artificial surfaces, for me, is one of the worst venues in Major League Soccer. That's a career extender as well, to get off that stuff. I know some people are not going to like that. You can hit me up at Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, if you want, and you can complain about that. So let's talk about some of the other signings. Johan Romagna, a 22-year-old Colombian. I really like this. This is interesting. And he's identified at Guarani while Austin FC and Claudio Reyna and Josh Wolf are watching these games and keeping an eye on their two signings in Redis and Dominguez. Going to be very interesting. Hector Jimenez, another defender, comes over from the Crew. And by the way, Romagna, the perfect pairing as a young guy to help cover Matt Beisler as the older experienced guy. So a lot of times that older center back and younger center back pairing can be good. But it's all going to be a work in progress. This is all on paper right now. Jimenez, 32 years, 7 years at the Crew. Josh Wolf obviously knows him very, very, very well. He's just another guy that can help out. He comes over from the LA Galaxy. Julio Cascante. Now, this is a chance for this guy, Julio Cascante, who has a lot of good talents and a lot of good qualities. This is a chance for him to shine, establish himself. I would say that for a number of these signings. Jared Stroud may be another one, who at 25 or 24 now out of Colgate showed a lot of promise, didn't score goals. Good crosser of the ball, tremendous energy. But one of these players that got extended opportunity during COVID and made an impression. Spent a lot of time at Red Bull too. Got a lot of opportunity last year due to COVID. So there you go. Who else did I forget to bring up here? Let's see. Ulysses Segura. We'll talk about him with DC United. Has played a variety of positions from Costa Rica. We'll talk about him in the next segment with Stephen Goff, the soccer insider, who's going to join us shortly. And then, of course, Danny Hooson, John Gallagher. Danny Hooson, another nice pickup from San Jose, and John Gallagher, a player with a lot of promise. So it's good. We're happy tonight. We're talking soccer. Yeah, I understand. I know that other big game's on. Tide and Buckeyes. I hope there's some soccer fans tuning in right now. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. A break is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle. John and his firm, they're going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. They are huge supporters of soccer. John's a Chelsea fan, is headed over to England to see Chelsea games. And I'm sure he's going to be an Austin FC fan now as well. DaspitLawAustin.com. Call them. They're bilingual, 512-865-6710. Stones and Happy, take you to break. Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas, and talking to producer John during the break. Well, we found out he's an ELO fan. This is Do Ya by ELO, Jeff Lynne. Got to say, John, this is good break music right here. So we welcome you back to the show, as always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. Any type of accident that you get in, it's John and his firm. 512-865-6710. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. They are personal injury attorneys, and they do love the sport of soccer. So one of the good things to do is, if you do choose, support those that sponsor and get soccer on the airwaves. So there you go. Quick thing here, Matthew Hoppe, the three different goals that he scored for Schalke, by the way, were very unique. The first one, you know, he chips an on-rushing goalkeeper. The second one, he rounds a goalkeeper. And then the third one is just a driving run down the middle. He's found, and then with the outside of his foot, flicks it in. All right, let's go to our first guest of the night here. He is a soccer insider. He writes for the Washington Post. He's one of the great writers in Major League Soccer history, quite frankly. He's been there from the very beginning. He is Stephen Goff. He joins us now. Stephen, how are you?
Glenn, how are you, man?
I'm good. You know what's even more fun is when you call up on the day of your radio show and you go, you know, Goff, I need you on the show. And Goff says yes. So here you are. So thank you for coming on tonight.
I got nothing going on, man. I got nothing. I'm waiting. I'm just here waiting for your call.
You always got good stuff going on, and that's why you're one of the best. You're always on top of it. So for Austin FC fans, Stephen, I want to get right into a player that you have watched consistently at DC United, play for Saprissa, Ulysses Segura. Talk a little bit about what Austin FC is getting with him.
Good player. Not a great player. Steady, consistent. Versatile, most importantly, I think, for their purposes. He is a player that can play wide left, can play wide right, not really as a, you know, a fleet-footed flank player. He's not particularly fast, but he knows how to play the position. He can also play a holding midfield position. He filled in as an emergency striker as well, when DC United would play with one man up top and was really you know, straining in terms of depth. So he can play a lot of positions, and you can use him in a lot of ways. Works hard, good guy. He's been in the league now for a few years. He knows the league. He knows the teams. He's accustomed to the travel. As Costa Rican, you know, I think he'll fit in well. I think they can use him in many different ways, depending on what formation Josh wants to play and how they want to go about things. Good piece to have around. Not a guy who's going to necessarily win you games or, you know, do something spectacular, but a good solid piece for a team that is building from scratch.
Which is ultra important, by the way, in Major League Soccer. And as Josh Wolf has mentioned many times, and it is a big piece. You hear it a lot here in Houston with Tab Ramos. The middle third of the field and possession in that area, so vital now. Over the years, when you've watched him for D.C., he's had 40 starts and 6 appearances. Is he a good possession player? I'm going to say probably so, based on the games I've watched him play.
Yeah, pretty good with his feet. Won't necessarily, you know, beat players in possession or take guys on, but a good solid team player. Effective as a support player, as a starter, can come off the bench and give you something. Pretty good size. Physical when necessary, smart, has some national team appearances for Costa Rica. I think a good guy to have around on your team, like I said, for many different purposes.
Talking to Stephen Goff. He is the Soccer Insider. He writes for the Washington Post, one of the best. All right. So what's going on with DC United and the coaching position here? And
you tell me.
I don't know. You're the guy who's in that market. You know it better than me. What can you say about it?
They offered the job to Chris Armas about a month ago. Couldn't strike a deal. Not necessarily over money. There were various issues. They then turned their attention to Gonzalo Pineda, assistant coach for Seattle for the last 4 years. Again, they hit a roadblock. Not necessarily over, base salary. It's always more complicated than that in any negotiation. But in the last few days, they've moved on from that as well. They've talked to Joe Ellis. Talked to Ezra Hendrickson, the Columbus Crew assistant, who has a lot of experience around the league as a player and a coach. That didn't really, I don't think they were too sold on Ezra. Joe Ellis, I don't know if either side really felt it was the right situation or the right fit. I haven't completely ruled her out yet, but doesn't look like she's in the mix. They've looked overseas a little bit. They've talked to many people. They've talked to 25 or 30 people. They've had formal interviews with, maybe a dozen or so. Now they're looking hard in Europe. The assistant coach of Manchester City, Rodolfo Borrell, has been in the mix for about a month now. I don't know if things have gotten serious with him or not. They've talked to Clarence Seedorf, the former Dutch midfielder who has some coaching experience. I don't think that went very far. And the one guy who's kind of stayed in the mix the whole time, presumably as the backup pick, the safety pick, is Chad Ashton, the longtime assistant coach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would not be shocked.
Neither would I.
I don't think he'll get it, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. So this is taking forever.
Can I take you back, Stephen? Can I take you back to Armas and Pineda? Armas has already got experience as a head coach. Pineda's been with Seattle, obviously one of the best, if not the best franchise over the last 5-6 seasons, right? Incredible organization, and Brian Schmetzer up there. Okay, so if it's not about the dollars, what is it about? Control, budget? Are those the areas you think that were the stumbling blocks? Because these two guys would seem to be two very good candidates for DC.
I don't know the specifics, but I can say that based on my experience covering these things. It's not just a matter of, oh, we like you. Here's the amount of money we have. Do you want it? You know, the world doesn't work like that. There's money. There's guaranteed years. There's option years. There's who you get to bring in on your staff. There are levels of commitments from ownership about spending on players. There's all kinds of things here. So the only thing I know is that the Armas and Pineda situations were very different for the reasons they weren't able to strike a deal.
Talking to Stephen Goff here, and we appreciate Stephen coming on the show. Real quick here, before we let you go and got to go to break, you know, obviously for the third time in the last year, MLS and the MLS Players Association going back to the bargaining table. Now we're hearing whispers of there's a possible work stoppage. I don't believe that's going to happen. I think that would be brutally poor timing for both. But we do know that MLS did lose $1 billion last year. That's what they say. Where do you see this whole thing right now? And is this something that gets sorted out quickly? And, you know, when do we play? End of March, into April? Talk to me.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, MLS foresees a big financial hit again this coming year, knowing that, you know, they're not going to have full stadiums over the course of an entire season, or maybe over a half a season. We just don't know yet.
Could possibly, you know, be the whole season. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah. Right? And it could be market to market. You know, again, it could be areas.
Saying that in Austin, though.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation. MLS has proposed to the Players Association that the players do not have to take a pay cut, unlike last summer, where they took a 5% cut and they, you know, passed up bonuses and other incentives. They would not have to take a cut this year. In exchange, they would agree to extend the CBA for an additional 2 years, which locks the players in to the, you know, the terms for 2 years longer than obviously they'd want to. You always want to renegotiate. That's the players want a shorter deal, always, in all sports. You don't want a long deal. You want to be able to talk and you know, improve on your deal. So that's where they'd have to sacrifice. So we'll see. We'll see if they accept that. Seems pretty straightforward, but, you know, all these things are complicated. MLS, the CBA requires 6 weeks of training camp, no more, presumably no less, before a season starts. MLS has targeted mid-March to start. I don't think that's going to happen. I just think things are too unsettled around the country. And the fact that MLS depends heavily on game day revenue. And if you're not going to have many fans or no fans, the league is going to really get hit hard financially. So I don't know. Sometime this spring, hopefully the season starts. You know,
yeah.
Is it April 1st? Is it May 1st? Is there a bubble concept to start and then get into regular season like the NWSL is doing? I don't know. Remains to be seen.
Stephen, as always, thank you very much for coming on. Please take care of yourself and always enjoy your insight into soccer and Major League Soccer specifically. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Anytime.
All right. So that was Stephen Goff. This is LCD Sound System. We're going to take you to break with that. By the way, you know, when Major League Soccer and the Players Association, you know, came to agreement last February, budget went to, $8.5 million almost. By 2024, it will be closer to $12 million. So, interesting stuff there. Again, Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they will have you covered. And by the way, I forgot to mention the goalkeeping situation for Austin. Got to think Andrew Tarbell comes in as the starter, Brad Stuver as the backup, Grady Scott, the very talented young future goalkeeper who was just called into the under-23s under Jason Christ. All right, we'll take a break. It's an LCD sound system and DaspitLawAustin.com break. Welcome back to the Horn in Austin, Texas. As we roll on here tonight, as always, our show is brought to you by DaspitLawAustin.com. I would just tell you this, without DaspitLawAustin.com and John Daspit and his personal injury attorneys, we would not be on the air talking soccer. So it's pretty simple like that. You get in an accident, a car, boat, motorcycle, you call John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. All right, and they bring us our next guest, and he's been a great guest on this show in Austin, also in Houston, for many years now. He is Warren Barton, the former Newcastle defender, Fox Sports analyst. He joins us now. Warren, how are you?
I'm very well, my friend. Like everybody else, we've had a holiday period now, and looking forward to what may be coming ahead. But yeah, we're hanging on in there, as we say, hanging on in there. But all good, my friend. All good.
Yeah, I always like talking to you about player development. And, you know, obviously you've worked with a lot of young, talented players. What's going on as far as San Diego and your area of the country when it comes to training and coaching and being able to get on fields? What's happening there?
Well, we're still lucky enough in California that we are able to get onto the fields down in San Diego. Parts of L.A., and Orange County not being able to do that. But in San Diego, we've tried to abide by the rules, sticking by it. If we need games, we have to travel. But Glenn, the biggest thing I think for the kids is just to be outside playing and have some activity, just mentally stimulating them physically as well. So we're able to coach 3-4 times a week with the kids, getting them out there. Obviously, they want to play games. But the good thing is we're out on the fields and we're trying to keep them motivated, keep them focused. It's not ideal situation, we know that, but there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And unlike some states where they play games, and I think where you are, you're able to play games, we're not in that level at the moment. But it is what it is, and we just have to keep plugging away and keep persevering. And as I said, hopefully the light's at the end of the tunnel sooner rather than later. But the kids have been great. They keep me motivated as well, my friend, because there's nothing else going on. So you've got to keep that going. So it's a two-way thing. It's not just the coaches that motivate the kids and the players. It can be the other way around as well. And we're doing well. Myself and Shannon McMillan are keeping the club going, and we're just waiting now for some games. But with this pandemic, the way it was roaring, particularly over the holiday period, we felt it was safe just to shut down for a couple of weeks. But now we're back on the field. The sun's out and the kids are laughing and enjoying themselves, which is the main thing.
Fantastic. Leadership of coaches like yourself, very important for young people at this time period here. We're talking to Warren Barton, former Newcastle defender. All right, I want to talk about some of this FA Cup magic we saw this weekend. I flipped on Marine FC, taking on Spurs. I think Marine FC technically is the eighth tier of English football, semi-pros, guys that are sanitation workers and coming and playing against Spurs and all kinds of differing jobs. Really amazing story, but the backdrop of the homes and people in their gardens watching this game was remarkable. And I just wanted to get your thought on it, because there was something really romantic about this and refreshing to me in this time period that just glued me to watching this game. Even though the scoreline was a beast for Spurs, I think they end up winning 5-0. It just was a very uplifting thing to watch these guys competing against, you know, a club like Spurs.
For me, Glenn, it was very real, you know, to see the lady having a glass of wine and the other girls that was having a glass of champagne. And then actually see there was a guy standing on a tree in his backyard overlooking a game, watching Gareth Bale play, which is quite surreal when you think of it. But when you look at the FA Cup and what it able to do for non-league clubs, lower league clubs, and even though Jamie Carragher, the Liverpool legend, is part ownership and has a foundation with them, it was just fascinating to watch, you know, these Premier League stars. And Mourinho, you know, who's been at the highest level and won Champions Leagues and been at some of the biggest clubs in the world. He's got a guy over his shoulder who's having a cigarette and a cup of tea while he's watching the game. It was brilliant. It was exactly what the FA Cup is all about. It's had a little bit of criticism in the past about no romance and, you know, no one's going to be there watching it. It was fascinating, and it's everything that the FA Cup means to me. I was lucky, Glenn, as a player to play in a couple of cup finals and being in that lower league level as well where I started, I've played against the big boys where they come into a stadium where the changing rooms are freezing cold, the tea's cold, the sugar is not sugar, it's salt, and all these type of things that you try and level up, to get the groundsman to go out there and kick up a few divots so when these superstars come down, it's not like a perfect bowling green for them. But I just thought it was fascinating and great, typical Mourinho. They was professional, they was classy, did their job, got out of there. And, there was a touching story that because no one could be in that stadium, yes, they got the TV revenue from the BBC, which is probably $200,000 to keep them going for a few years. But how people have interacted in this last year with this pandemic, they did a virtual game. And that stadium, I think, only holds about 3,000 to 4,000. It looked like it, maybe even less. They sold nearly 35,000 tickets online, and people was paying £10 a ticket to watch it online, and that's how they was going to earn the revenue. And that's what's so fascinating about what we're going through at the moment and how they improvised in a difficult situation, because normally that place would have been packed, the TV there, as I said, it would only have been 3,000 to 4,000 people, but it meant so much for everybody that they thought about it and the country got behind them and started watching the game rather than on BBC. They were streaming it live and people was paying that £10 or $15 to watch the game. And a brilliant story, and one that I think it gives you a little bit of warmth in your heart, a little bit of cool cockles in your muscles and things like that. It gets you going back to, that's what the game's about. It's about these fellas that are bricklayers and builders and plumbers to play against these superstars. So it made us smile anyway. It made me have a chuckle because I've been on both sides of that.
And I think a lot of people felt the same way because it's just a part of the game. We don't see much anymore because players in the modern game have become so elite now. Let's face it, that's not a word that can't be used with them. Are you worried that this overlap doesn't occur a little bit more because there's so many healthy things that come out of this?
No, it is the FA Cup. Every year we go through this. Let me go back to when I was at Newcastle, as you mentioned. We come against a non-league team, although they was higher up, probably in the sixth tier of the amateur soccer tier in the professional game back in England, called Stevenage Borough. And we was a Newcastle managed by Kenny Dalglish, who had won the competition with Liverpool, a legend in his own right. And we got drawn against them. So I'm going back to like the mid to late 90s. And that was a fairy tale story there. We've had stories before where Wimbledon have beat Liverpool in a final, 4 years ago, they was in the lower league. So it does happen. And every year something comes around and gives you that special feeling. And that was no different. We got drawn against Stevenage Borough. Their stadium, again, probably hold a bit more, 5,000, 6,000. We made, being Newcastle, the wrong idea to say, well, look, why don't you bring it up to St. James's Park? You're going to get 52,000 people. You can have the revenue. They spun it round. Oh, you're scared. You don't want to play us. You don't want to come down to little Stevenage Borough. And it was quite a story, and it got a little bit feisty with the two managers. There was in the media, in all the papers. They're scared. We don't want to play them. And we ended up beating them and got to the final anyway. But it was another way of getting that romance, and we're going down there, and the field was awful. I knew I played no league, I love a league. I knew exactly what was coming because I would have done it myself. And it was just another story of what the FA Cup can bring up. And as I said, that's over 20 years ago. So, and now we're talking about the same type of things. And it was so fascinating. As I said, it was great to watch, people in their bedrooms having a cup of tea, watching the game. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it was amazing watching that, and it obviously really connected, I think, with a lot of people. All right, Sheffield United is the next opponent for Newcastle tomorrow, and I just wanted to get an update from you. Let's start with DeAndre Yedlin and his time at Newcastle and how you have seen his game evolve and how much you think it's evolved since he's come over from Major League Soccer to play for such a legendary club.
Yeah, I think his game has evolved immense. Now he's, I wouldn't say the finished article because there's still a long way to go with his development. His final product can be better. His defending can be a little bit better as well. But what I've noticed with him is when he first come to Newcastle with Rafa Benitez, it went so well. I was talking about how he's going to go on from this and, be a stonewall for Newcastle. But like anything, the expectations were got a little bit too much for him. And he lost his way about 6 months ago, 7 months ago. And whether he didn't know whether to play with Steve Bruce, they was playing, you know, five at the back, or they was playing four at the back. I think he just lost his way a little bit, and maybe lost a little bit of confidence. Steve's brought him back into the team, Steve Bruce, and he's gone with a little bit of hunger. And that's what I see when he was at Seattle, Glenn. When I first noticed him, I thought, he's hungry, he's got tenacious, he's quick, he's aggressive in what he does, and everything that he did. Whether he took a quick throw in, it was aggressive. Whether he got on the ball, he was aggressive. And as I said, probably about 8-9 months ago, just lost his way slightly and was a little bit more thoughtful about what he was doing. And that's not him. I love what I see when he's aggressive with what he's doing and he goes forward and he makes things happen. And he showed a bit of character, because it's not easy at the moment, you know, with the situation for players. He wasn't in the team, couldn't really play, go on loan anywhere. But he's come back and he's starting to show that hunger and determination, which we all see in Major League Soccer when he was first here, and when he first went over to the UK for Sunderland, where he did well in the Championship, and obviously ultimately getting a move to Newcastle. But I just think he lost his way slightly positional, because Steve had changed him from a three at the back, five at the back, whatever you want to call it, or just a flat back four. And he was just found a lack of confidence. But there's no doubt about his ability. You know, he needs to work, as I said, on one or two aspects of his game, but he's still a relatively young man. But I think he's given Greg a little reminder, Greg Berhalter, to say, look, you know, don't forget me. We know we've got a good group of young players that are coming through at the moment, but I'm worth a look, and I'm playing ultimately in the best league in the world and one of the top teams. So, you know, that's have a look at me, and it gives him another option, him being Greg Berhalter, another option.
How do you critique, Warren, the job Steve Bruce is doing at Newcastle based on, you know, all the other things that are around the club, expenditures, spending on players, etc.?
And this is a real, you know, from an outside person looking in, you think Steve Bruce is doing a decent job. You know, he's kept the club reasonably safe in the Premier League. They've got, you know, some decent performances. But it's a style of football that's frustrating everybody at St. James's Park, if anybody could get into the stadium. So, and him being a Geordie, which again confuses me a little bit, is that he's not shown the passion. And Steve was a tremendous player and a leader for Manchester United and a top professional and a winner. And I think he's just gone into Newcastle, and he said it the other week, which is demoralising for me as an ex-player. It's just about surviving. For me, Newcastle shouldn't be just about surviving. It should be about competing and challenging. Now, whether people say that's unrealistic, but I look at that roster, that squad of players that he's got, and you look at Wolves, you look at Everton, you look at Leicester. Why can't Newcastle be in that bracket? I'm not saying we're Liverpool. I'm not saying we're Manchester City. And even throw Man United and Chelsea into that equation. But that squad of players that he's got, Glenn, and you touched on it as a coach, I want my teams to be aggressive. I want them to play football. I want them to try and win every game. Steve goes into it, in my opinion, looking at it from the outside, not to lose a game. He's adamant to go into games. And that's a slightly different mindset. When you see the players so far deep, defending in their own half, and then you expect them to go 55 yards forward and score a goal, it's never going to happen. It's not going to happen like that. You know, even the best teams, when, if you like, Gareth Bale and Benzema and Ronaldo, they played semi-counter-attacking, but they stayed up. They stayed on the halfway line or even in the opposing half. They didn't come all the way back. We're getting 11 men behind the ball and expecting them to go 60, 70 yards to score a goal. So if you ask Mike Ashley, Steve's doing his job, ticking away. If you ask 52,000 fans and probably about another 25 ex-professionals, you could say, I want more. I need more. You know, you hear Alan Shearer saying, is it too much to ask to be ambitious for a club like Newcastle? Yeah. And the answer is no. You know, that goes without saying. So, you know, from my point of view, he's done okay. I've seen a couple of games and was over there live last year when we was able to. And his body language wasn't good as well. He's not hungry for the game. You know, I'm saying about Yedlin being hungry and aggressive. You know, even when he wins a game, it's quite doom and gloom, you know, and he should be enjoying it. He's a Geordie. He knows what it means to win a game for Newcastle. And, you know, it's another year that's just plodding along. And until you get someone in there that's really going to get the club by the scruff of the neck and be ambitious and go forward, that doesn't mean as well spending money. I just think you can put your teams out a little bit better and make them be a bit more adventurous when they get the ball.
No, you provided the perfect example with clubs like Wolves and others that, you know, don't have the bankroll that a lot of other teams have. Is it possible he's losing the edge a little bit?
That's a great point, Glenn. I mean, some coaches may be getting that comfort zone. You see, there was a turnaround of Tony Pulis got another job at Sheffield Wednesday. He didn't last, 55 days. He left. There was Pardew. Sam Allardyce has come back in. Would that excite me as a player to get Sam Allardyce? I know the owners are saying, well, if he keeps me in the league, it's worth it. But I want to play for someone that's going to want to perform and have that hunger. And, you know, we're all the same sort of age, me and Steve, as a couple of years older, but it's different personalities. But yeah, maybe it's like you need that edge, or maybe it's the staff. You know, you see a lot of these coaches, they keep taking the same person around with them. I know you have to trust them, but it gets monotonous. You know, my experience as well with Sir Bobby Robson, he never really took anyone with him. He loved being around different people. He knew, he was so confident in his own ability and what he wanted. He knew he could translate to whatever coach, assistant coach was next to him, whether it was Mourinho at Barcelona or John Carver at Newcastle and Steve Clarke. He knew he could get his point across and do well. And both of them have won, you know, trophies as well in the past. So, you know, maybe that comes into it. And maybe sometimes pressure does strange things to people, but it does seem to be that merry-go-round. I mean, I look at, you know, I would be walking on air going through there managing Newcastle. And I look at Martial. Here's another example. The Liverpool, Manchester United centre forward. He plays the game like he's angry and fed up. I mean, you're number nine at Man United. You should be laughing and joking and thriving to be out there, you know. And I just think it's, you know, maybe how people handle pressure a little bit different. But I know Andy Cole and Dwight York, when they was at Man United, they think stops laughing and giggling because they was winning and playing for arguably one of the biggest clubs in the world. So a Martial, a Steve Bruce, you should be coming into work every single day with a smile on your face as big as a Cheshire cat, because it's you've got one of the best jobs in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah. Warren Barton, former Newcastle defender, weighing in here on a number of different topics around the club. How about a quick hit here before we let you go on Miguel Almiron and how he's done at Newcastle? And, you know, I see the way he plays the game, and I'm not sure it could be very fun for him to be playing in this kind of system either.
No, you're absolutely right. And there's a lot of players that you look at them and, you know, even the likes of Jonjo Shelvey that comes deep to get the ball. But Miggy Almiron, he's a player that wants to excite you. He wants to get on the ball. He wants to express himself. And his agent came out a few months ago and said, look, you know, if it doesn't change, we might have to look elsewhere and go football. But he's playing for a fantastic football club. The problem is at the moment he's in a system that the coach wants him to defend first rather than attack first. But his attitude has never been a doubt with the players up there. Miggy, he's gone in there. He plays well. He's always got a smile on his face and enjoys it. I just think there's so much more for him to give. I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, a Ronaldo or a Gareth Bale in the future, but he's definitely going to be an exciting player. And he's got a personality. He reminds me very much of what Norberto Solano, that I played with, another South American, the Peruvian, got on the ball. He's got a little bit of class, that little bit of delicate touch on the ball. He can make things happen if allowed. At the moment, he's not being allowed, but he's shown great character. He's dug in. I've always loved, and I spoke to a lot of people at Atlanta, his attitude. He always wants to play. He always wants to train. And that's a good trait. And hopefully Newcastle can look after him and get him going, because I think he's a real talent and I think he can add to any team in the Premier League. And when he gets the ball, he excites me. Yes, he loses it. Yes, he gets tackled. But the next thing, he gets it and runs at someone else again and tries to make things happen. So he's doing okay, Glenn, but he just needs to be given the license to express himself. But there's probably another 11 players like that is in the same situation at Newcastle.
Warren, as always, we thank you so much for coming on the show. Tremendous insight. I mean, I could do another 5 segments with you. I mean, I just love talking the game with you, and your insight is exceptional. So thank you, as always, for coming on the program. We'll talk to you real soon.
Absolute pleasure, my friend. Take care.
All right. That's a great way to end the night here on Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. Hope everybody is staying safe up there and enjoying maybe shoveling snow for the first time ever. Until next week. Remember, you can hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, and of course the podcast at hornfm.com. The show is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. John and his firm are going to work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. That'll do it tonight for Soccer Matters on the Horn, presented by DaspitLawAustin.com.